Well done to everybody, and I am delighted to officially open the Tyabb Somerville Rotary Shelter and Barbecue.
Welcome to this week's edition of Eye on the Peninsula, Tuesday the 21st of June, with Member for Flinders and Environment, Minister Greg Hunt, opening our program. We'll hear more from Mr. Hunt about the wonderful work the Rotary Club of Somerville and Tyabb are doing for the community. Good afternoon, I'm Piers Cunningham, broadcasting from the RPPFM studios in Mornington. Hope you can stay with us for another big program as we cover the opening of a new eatery in Mornington that has taste buds in overdrive. A couple of candidate hopefuls in the seat of Dunkley and Flinders get on their soapbox and spruik why you should vote for them. And other news items that are sweeping the peninsula. But first, it's a sound we all dread, especially in the bushfire season. In the past, we've had faith in the CFA to help us out in our hour of need, but how confident are we now? With the recent farce around the Andrews government and the United Firefighters Union, Peninsula residents are afraid CFA firefighters and volunteers will not be able to perform their job. Legislation will be prepared and implemented by the newly appointed CEO and board in coming weeks, is gathering criticism by local fireys. Liberal candidate for Dunkley, Chris Crowther, has the backing of the Turnbull government to protect CFA volunteers from the UFU if re-elected come July 2nd. Chris Crowther starts by explaining the situation to Deborah Maher that is causing disruption and angst among our firefighters and volunteers.
So there's over 60,000 volunteers in the CFA who were impacted by this. So we've had Daniel Andrews, as well as Bill Shorten, who has backed Daniel Andrews, supporting the unions and what they're doing, trying to take control of the CFA. Many volunteers have contacted me via email, via phone, and people in the street have talked about it. They're very unhappy about what Labor is doing to the CFA, who are volunteers who risk their lives to fight fires, to save homes, to save people's lives, save pets, to save farms. They're putting their lives on the line. They're doing it on a volunteer basis. And to put them through what the Labor government, state level, and also the Labor government at the federal level, back in the state colleagues, is quite terrible.
What will a re-elected Liberal government do to protect the CFA firefighters?
We are actually going to go about and actually change the Fair Work Act, the federal piece of legislation, to actually better protect our volunteers, whether it's in the CFA, the SES, or other volunteer-based organisations. It is the volunteers who make up our community and who drive our community. Government cannot replace the work of these individual volunteers who sacrifice their lives to help the community, and it's quite terrible what Labor are doing.
If your government is re-elected, how do you perceive to be able to protect the CFA from all the unions and, of course, the enterprise bargaining agreement?
Yeah, so we're going to look at the Fair Work Act, and we're going to change it accordingly to change it such that the unions do not have the control over the CFA as they're trying to do right now. Many CFA volunteers, as I said, are very concerned about this. They feel that they weren't properly consulted. They're just trying to do their job. I have nothing against paying the paid firefighters and the paid CFA more. I think we should actually do more to actually give them better work conditions. But the other issue is the CFA volunteers who don't want to be under the control and the beck of call of the unions. Even out here at the polling booth, we have union-authorised DLs, the brochures being handed out. They actually have CFA branding on them, which a lot of volunteers in the CFA are quite upset about. Mm. Essentially, union material being passed off as representing the whole of the CFA.
And it's interesting too that the ALP candidate Peter Murphy said it's a state issue. If she's saying that, how are you then going to make it a federal issue?
It's both a state issue and a federal issue at the same time. Bill Shorten has clearly backed Daniel Andrews and what he's doing. As we know, Bill Shorten has said that he will run the country like a union as well. And so they want to run the CFA by the unions. They want to run the country by the unions. And I don't see that's a good path for us to go down as a country and for our volunteer organisation. The fact is that we are actually going to change the Fair Work Act, which is a national or federal piece of legislation to protect our volunteers. The Fair Work Act gives us those federal powers in order to do so, so it is a federal issue.
Many issues have not been addressed under the Enterprise Bargaining Agreement to protect the CFA.
Essentially, the CFA board was sacked. There were 14 threshold issues that they raised. You can be found on the CFA's website. as issues they do not feel that were addressed under the EBA, and volunteers and their supporters, many people, ordinary people in the community who know how much our volunteers in the CFA do, are very concerned about what is going to happen in terms of that control that the union is trying to take over our CFA volunteers on the ground. They need their control to actually go out there, fight fires, and not actually worry about what they can or cannot do.
Federal Minister for Employment, Michaela Cash, has a range of powers to intervene in proceedings before the Fair Work Act Commission and the courts. But it's worth noting that under the Fair Work Act, the Commission cannot approve an enterprise bargaining agreement that contains discriminatory terms. The proposed EBA currently includes discriminatory terms. The new CFA board was announced on Friday, chaired by Greg Smith AM, a former commissioner for the Fair Work Commission. And the new board has appointed leading Victorian health sector executive Frances Diver as the CEO of the CFA. Ms. Diver will commence her role on June the 27th. Let's hope the stoush will be settled ASAP, and certainly before our bushfire season begins. Deborah Maher filed that report. Up next, a new barbecue and shelter open for operation, and ahead, a couple of candidates who want your vote. The Rotary Club of Somerville and Tyabe celebrated 30 years to the day last Friday with the opening of a barbecue and shelter at Tyabe Central Reserve. Local public figures involved in the project included sponsors SOBHP Billiton and Blue Scope Steel, Mornington Peninsula Shire Mayor Councillor Graham Pittock, the Shire's CEO Carl Cowie, and past and present Rotarians. Environment Minister and Member for Flinders, Mr. Greg Hunt, was nominated to perform the ribbon-cutting ceremony and cook the first sausage on behalf of the Stronger Communities program. Greg opened proceedings with this.
So I'm really thrilled to be at the opening of Tyabe and Somerville Rotary barbecue and shelter, and also to be cooking the first sausage. I really want to say just a couple of things. One is about Rotary and two is about the project and the community. Rotary, as you all know, is an amazing organisation. People volunteer their time, they do the right thing by the community, they just create better communities. Rotary, more generally, of course, is a worldwide movement, and if you ever wonder about the impact you can have, it was the work of the Rotary clubs on this side of the peninsula, so on the Somerville, Tyabe, Hastings side, that created the momentum for the National Schools Chaplaincy Program. And so a whole national movement and program came about from your work here, as well as the work that you've been doing in literacy. Now, the second thing is this project, hundreds and hundreds of hours of work that have gone into it. It is fabulous that when you think of all of the elements that go into it, it's locally sourced. You've got a Christie's barbecue, you have a Blue Scope roof, and I am certain that the council will be using Esso gas. Well done to everybody, and I am delighted to officially open the Tyabe Somerville Rotary Shelter and Barbecue.
In reply, President of Somerville and Tyabe Rotary Club, Chris Such, had this to say.
Today's a very significant day for the club because it's the actual anniversary of our establishment 30 years ago.
Erected a shed here, and it's a lovely barbecue. This was part of the community support grants. Who applied to the council?
Well, the club did. Our project manager is Captain Dick Cox, but as president of the club, I also needed to authorise that application.
What does it mean to the people of Tyabe and all around to have this established?
It came as a result of the need survey that the Shire conducted. It was a particularly important adjunct to this central Tyabe reserve that we're standing on, adjacent to the children's playground and the sporting pavilion. I was just talking to one of the cricketers who play here, and he said it will be a fabulous addition. What we wanted to do was to do something really significant that would be symbolic for that 30-year anniversary. But we're a small club, and the project was too big for us to undertake on our own.
How many members?
17 members. Where we'll be inducting one additional member on Wednesday night, which is when a lady member, local resident, she'll make the second female member of our club.
Sue Pilkington is the lady who will be sworn in tomorrow as the first female president of Somerville and Tyabe Rotary Club. more work has to be done to promote Rotary and the work they do.
I'm actually coming in as new president for the incoming year, first female president for our club, and I see that as a task in itself to actually get more women on board. Community, 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 that's what it's all about.
So how do you think you'll go with all the blokes?
I've worked in many industries with male-dominated, male-oriented over the years, so it's not an issue. We all get along well together.
So what will be your first project as president?
Very much about getting more people on board, spreading the message of what Rotary is, what it's all about. Rotary by nature doesn't tend to do its PR all that very well. And it's a pity because they do such fantastic works, not just at a local level, but national and international level. Polio is almost eradicated. The next step's going to be malaria, I believe. So, awesome task.
Another local who will be enjoying the new barbecue and shelter is Long Island Point Plant Manager Kim Hahn. She explains the involvement of SOBHP Billiton in helping the project to reach completion.
I'm very proud to be here. We helped the Rotary Club by contributing to the construction of the barbecue shelter here today. We made a donation towards the construction, so the Rotary Club have done a great job. They've got grants from the federal government as well as businesses, and we were one of the businesses that contributed along with our JV partners, BHP Billiton.
So why do you think it's important to erect something like this for the community?
A park like this is really important in the community. We've got the playground, it becomes a hub for the community, and so now that families can get together, have barbecues and have a hot meal is really special, and I think it's a way of improving our local community. Well, I just want to congratulate the Rotary Club on 30 years today. I was a Rotary Exchange student, so Rotary is very special to me, and so it's wonderful to see the good work that the Rotary Clubs do in our community.
Do they still do the exchange program?
I know Hastings are talking about it again, but I don't know about here in Somerville, but Rotary still do Rotary Exchange.
Kim said the barbecue and shelter is an appropriate recognition and a legacy the Rotary Club will leave as a focal point for the community to enjoy. Lastly, the founding president of Somerville and Tyabb Rotary, since it was formed 30 years ago, is Des Dean. Des addressed the crowd with strong views about the positioning of Rotary clubs on the world stage.
One thing I object, everyone's mentioning community, and of course this is a community project, but it irritates the hell out of me that Rotary concentrates on publicity through community projects around the world and is not working very hard on their international side, which is absolutely massive. The biggest thing I can think of is getting rid of polio. I wish Rotary would start emphasising the international work they've done. This club has contributed certainly in excess of $100,000 to foundation, which is a lot of money for a small club. Dick Cox, I gather, has been the leader of this project. He's been around all the time. He's always the one on his feet. I know he's organised virtually all of the work, or most of it, and Dick, I want to thank you very, very much for a massive effort, but I want to thank everyone very, very much. Thanks Dick in particular, and Greg also for opening it for us.
Deborah spoke on a more personal level with Des, who is concerned about the decreasing numbers of younger people involved in Rotary.
The younger people are difficult because they're so obsessed with the technical age. They go home and get on their computer and interface with other people and Facebook and all of this. Very hard to distract them from that. They don't see anything practical coming out of Rotary, or, well, several Lions clubs have collapsed, and any organisation like this, they don't see value in it because they don't understand the satisfaction one gets from physically putting in.
What do you think Rotary and other clubs have to do to try and turn that around?
Just get them involved somehow, and that's the difficult thing. We're all wrestling with it.
This small Rotary club has achieved so much for the community.
I went back through records, and I've turned up so far 184 different projects we've done in that time, and I'm still thinking of them each day. I think of another one. I could pass 200. Some of them insignificant, unknown, unheard of. Others, major projects. The biggest ones we've had publicly are Peninsula Days, where we've had exhibitions on the peninsula catering for locals and farming communities.
It's worth noting Des was the man who started ProBus 27 years ago. The first meeting was held in Frankston. Des made mention of another prominent Rotary member, Dick Cox. Dick was one of the instigators who had a lot to do with the building of the wonderful RPPFM studios in Mornington some 6 years ago. The RPPFM boardroom is named in his honour. Now, an independent standing for the seat of Dunkley, followed by Flinders candidate for the Animal Welfare Party, and what's the fuss and excitement around a new eatery in Mornington?
Peninsula Radio, 98.7, 98.3 FM.
A couple of independents are representing local seats for this election. Here is another independent Dunkley candidate who is happy to speak unequivocally about inequality in Australia. Anarchist Dr. Joseph Toscano has formed the Toscano for Dunkley Party. The basis of his campaign is to make the rich pay more taxes to form a more egalitarian society. Here's how.
Standing as an independent in the electorate of Dunkley for one very good reason. I believe that the major issue of this election campaign has been squibbed by all the major political parties. And the major issue is, why does the corporate sector in this country legally pay no taxation or minimal taxation? Now, it's all very well to say to people that we need to make cuts or we need to find new ways of finding revenue, but why has the corporate sector been quarantined? So that's the basis of the campaign. Because a lot of people wonder why they're having trouble accessing public resources like public housing, public education, public health. So I'm raising four simple things to raise $150 billion per year. 40% of the wealth in this country is owned by 1% of the population, and 40% of the population actually own less than 1% of the wealth in this country. So we're not an egalitarian community. So the four suggestions are very simple. It's a matter of Parliament passing legislation to force corporations to pay up because they use everything that we provide. This, the police force, the armed forces, the roads, the infrastructure, health services. So the things I'm proposing are very simple. One, a 1% stock market turnover tax. You would raise $30 billion per year. Two, a 1% turnover tax for companies with a yearly turnover of more than $2 million. You'd raise another $30 billion. A 1% financial services tax for every transaction above $50,000, excluding the family home, another $40 billion. If everybody's paying 10% GST, why is there never enough money to provide for services? That's a huge GST. Well, the fact is that businesses claim the GST as a legal, legitimate tax deduction. So what I'm suggesting is that any company or individual that has a yearly turnover of greater than $5 million, that they can't claim the GST as a tax deduction. That would raise approximately about $50 billion.
Where are these figures coming from, Joseph?
Well, they're basically coming from... freely available material that you can find on the internet, that you can find in Hansard. In terms of the economy, we've got a $1 trillion economy in this country. You need to understand that 80 to 85% of small businesses close within 5 years of opening. And it's impossible for small business to actually compete against large corporations that pay voluntary taxation. So these suggestions would mean that small and micro businesses would actually be able to compete with the large corporations on possibly an equal, a level playing field.
What I'm hearing from you, Joseph, is a lot of figures flying around. Mm. How do you bring that down to the mums and dads and say, this is what I'm standing for. I want to know what you're going to do for me to make it more equal, a fair world, as you put it.
It's very simple. There are 24 million of us living on a continent which is resource rich. Why can't we look after the basic needs of most of the people in this country? But we now got a concept of the working poor, where people get paid so little because of part-time, casual type of work.
Dr. Toscano believes a lot of our social programs stem from the fact that the richer are getting richer and the poorer are getting poorer. This is what he says about inequity.
The more inequality you have, the more insecurity you have, the more crime you have, the more personal suffering you have, the more homelessness you have. To tackle the issue of inequality is a way of ensuring that all Australians at least enjoy access. This is what Australia is all about.
Do you think Shorten at the moment is addressing that in his election campaign?
He is, but he's hamstrung by the fact that he can't find the revenue. So he's got to either find the revenue through the cuts or he's got to find the revenue through new taxes.
In closing, Deborah asked what type of people stand as an independent.
Well, we want to make a difference. I don't expect to win, let's be realistic. But I'm hoping to get at least 5 to 10% of the vote in order to send a message to people that things are changing and that to actually stand as an independent. Not only do you have to cough up $1,000 as your deposit, which you lose if you don't get 4% of the vote, but you've also got to get 100 people in the electorate of Dunkley to nominate you. It's one of the most interesting electorates. One, it's marginal. Two, it's a microcosm of Australian society. You've got the richest people at Oliver's Hill in Frankston and the poorest people in the Pines within 3 km of each other. It's just an extraordinary electorate, and that's part of the reason we're standing.
Interesting views and concepts given by Dr. Joseph Toscano, who is standing as an independent in his party called Toscano for Dunkley, for the seat of Dunkley. That report filed by Deborah Maher. And lastly, a young man who believes that poor animal practices on the peninsula need to be exposed. Ben Wild, a local advocate for animal welfare, decided to run in the seat of Flinders for the Animal Justice Party. He describes the party line and what his party stands for.
The Animal Justice Party itself was formed as a response to the growing public concern about the neglect of animals by the major political parties. We aim to promote and protect the interests of animals by providing a dedicated voice to them. The political system. It's estimated that up to 80% of decisions made by politicians are affecting animals, yet really have no one there representing them.
What about the RSPCA?
The RSPCA don't really have any political bite. They're a body that's actually gets funding by state government, but they actually don't have any political power. And in the end, they're actually just beholden to policies that come down from the minister or the Department of Agriculture. Look, I kind of feel a little bit for the RSPCA because they get it from both sides. They've got the agriculture side who are against them because they feel as though they're too goody greenies who are coming in and stepping on their toes. They also get it from the animal welfare and animal rights sides because it feels as though they actually don't do anything because the reality is they actually don't have that much power. There's some classic examples of that actually in the news right now that just shows how inadequate the power given to the RSPCA is.
So if you were in power, what would you do in a situation like this? How could you bring this to the attention of Parliament to get action?
Well, now, number one policy is the establishment of an independent office of animal welfare. So right now, animal welfare legislation is governed by the Department of Agriculture and obviously by the Minister, whose also primary function is to care for agricultural industries and the, I guess what I would call the exploitation of animals in the production of value-added goods. So right now we're sitting in a situation with a massive conflict of interest. So we need to separate the powers here and we need an independent office who can actually have the power of prosecution, who could actually empower industries or boards like the RSPCA to go in and do things immediately once they find out.
Other policies and concerns on Ben's agenda.
So two of our other policies. One policy is the ending of factory farming. And I guess the public support and public sentiment behind factory farming is not only just through the 90% of Australians who believe that it's outrageous, but also through their purchasing habits, which has seen a switch from caged practices and caged eggs, I guess, to free-range and more organic style and buying local.
Ben wants to ensure people are informed about inappropriate animal welfare practices on the peninsula so they can be the voice for animals.
It's happening in our own backyard. I mean, anywhere in Australia, I think at any one point in time, there's 100 million chickens. 30 million of them are located and raised, and these are broiler chickens for eating, down in the peninsula itself. The current laws state that you could actually have up to 20 of these broiler chickens in a 1 square metre space, and that's legal. So that's not very pleasant for us. We sit here and we claim that we're so caring and loving for our animals, yet we don't take any responsibility as to how we actually get them onto our plate.
Look out for Ben in local shopping centres and public places campaigning for the Animal Justice Party.
So I launched the campaign for Ben Wild running in Flinders about 10 days ago. And over the next few weeks, I'm hoping to get out to all the major sort of areas and have some face-to-face time with lots of the locals. I'll be standing in as many sort of corners as I can stand on and as many shopping centres as I can get to, and there's so much happening down in the peninsula that needs animal attention and needs help, and we're the party that can actually help people get that through.
More of Eye on the Peninsula in a moment, when a brand new cafe in Mornington will be revealed. But first, this is from a concerned local. A Mount Martha woman was walking her dog last week along Safety Beach and found a fish hook wrapped in a dog treat. She wants to warn other people walking their dogs in the vicinity of Safety Beach, the Safety Beach Yacht Club and the dog-friendly beach, Tassels Cove, to be vigilant and report any further findings to the Mornington Peninsula Shire. The Shire was unavailable for comment.
This is 98.7, 98.3 RPPFM.
With the peninsula's population creeping up to 160,000, made up of 25% Greeks, Italians and Germans, Dutch and British collectively, we are fast becoming a multicultural society. To reflect this, we've witnessed an upsurge in trendy, rustic coffee houses, bars and restaurants serving international cuisine and the best coffee in the Southern Hemisphere. One draw card is the variety of fresh farm produce locally available, attracting food entrepreneurs and restaurateurs. When news got out that Oasis Bakery, a modern Middle Eastern grocery store, cafe and bakery from the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne, was opening a pop-up store in Mornington, the excitement was too much for some. Deborah tracked down owner George Marku and his mum, Mawu, in the new Oasis Bakery pop-up store to ask why Mornington was the chosen place to set up a sister store.
We chose Mornington because it's kind of like a gateway to the peninsula. It's some of the best produce in Melbourne. Is here, you know, you look at Mornington, all the wineries, all the fresh produce, it's all here, so it's easy for us to get all the to bring good produce from the farm to your table, you know, and that's why we wanted Mornington.
We're quite a multicultural society down here, aren't we? Did you do any research into what type of cultures are on the peninsula?
Look, not really. We didn't really do any research or anything, but we're here a lot, so we see. There's so many people here with so little option. We thought we'd bring something new to the peninsula. We have a lot of customers that are from the peninsula that are shopping with us now, and so it's sort of they can come here and go do their shopping in Murrumbina as well. So it's sort of a stop in between.
It's going to have a lovely urban feel. This is just a pop up at the moment, but you're going to be in full swing when.
We're hoping in the next 24 months we'll be operating. It's going to be a really large store, cafe, big garden, function room, and sort of like a grocer, I should say. A real family-friendly environment, garden area.
Were you born here?
Born here, yeah.
And your cultural background?
Lebanese.
So you bring a lot of fantastic Lebanese food to the table
as definitely.
Well?
Yeah, definitely. So the menu's very Middle Eastern inspired. A lot of dishes on the menu are traditional Lebanese dishes, and we've sort of just put our take on them.
Yeah. So what's in North Road at the moment? You're going to mirror what's there in months to come?
Bigger, better, a lot more inviting as well. We'll be growing our own produce, have gardeners working full time, and these chefs can walk outside and grab some herbs and stuff, and we'll cook it for you, and you'll be able to, it'll all be transparent, you'll be able to see it all. We'll have activities at the playground, a little animal farm, where, you know, we'll have some chickens and some rabbits and sort of like a little hen. Things that we're really excited about.
Cooking classes?
Definitely. Definitely, yeah.
Will you be the chef?
So mum's the chef and she's got a cookbook out. She runs all our cooking classes and she's been really successful at the Murrumbina store. Hopefully as successful in Mornington.
Mawu is working on her second cookbook. She explains her style of cooking and where her passion comes from.
It's a twist of a Middle Eastern food, but it's all, I mix the flavors. I get the flavor from the Middle East, add spices to it, and I did it like modern Middle Eastern, mixed everything together.
So why do you think people are fascinated or interested in doing cooking classes?
The idea to do the cooking class at the start, just I wanted the people, educate the people how to eat healthy. This is my idea, and when the people are looking for something healthy, they come to the cooking class. They find it hard to cook because everything going around like chefs and hard to cook, and I just showed them it's not hard to cook, and with the nice taste you don't have to use lots of ingredients to make a dish. So I've shown them you need 2-3 ingredients to make a beautiful dish, doesn't cost much, and all that, it helped them, and people keep coming again and again and to learn more and more.
So how excited are you to bring family down here?
I am very excited. I'm happy because I did some cooking classes for one of the school here. The kids touched my heart, and I wanted to, I choose Mornington here because I love the people around here. And I just I looked around. There is not such a thing like healthy food or something yummy food or something wow. And with the taste, with the flavor, everything the same. So I choose Mornington because it's all family, all kids, all my life. I want to encourage the kids to have healthy food. So hopefully we do well in Mornington.
This is why locals are excited about the arrival of Oasis Bakery.
I'm very excited that it's coming here to Mornington because it's a great venue and they have lovely cooking classes and the food is delicious and all the spices and everything you can buy.
Now, do you think Mornington is ready for this?
Definitely.
I'm amazed at how full this place is when it's only been open 2 days. I don't know how all these people have found out about it, but they have.
Word of mouth. We heard from a friend.
Mornington's will be looking forward to this. I think it'll be very popular and well attended.
Well, the vibe of the place is obviously very good because look at the people that are here. If there was no vibe, the people wouldn't be here for a start. So obviously Mornington has embraced the shed for a start and a new venue. Yeah, so I think it'll do very well.
It's all ages. Yeah, well, we'd be happy to bring our grandchildren here. They would love it.
We heard about it from a friend and we came in to check it out. And we think it's great. This is our first try. So a couple of coffees and a nice treat. And that's what we're here for today. It's great to get different cuisines for everyone to try. I think it'll fit in well. I know they're going to make something big. It should be a good place to come with the kids.
I know we've got a lot of choice, but it's great to have multicultural food, in my opinion. People are a little bit open now to, you know, not stuffy sort of eating places, something with atmosphere. Last year I went to New York and I think that sort of got that vibe about it.
My cheese pie was delicious with broccoli, very tasty. My coffee was delicious. And my husband's burger was...
I can speak for myself. I can speak for myself and my burger was lovely.
What did you think about your meal today?
It was wonderful. Really lovely.
Have you heard about Oasis Bakery before?
Not until I came here the first time, what, 2 days ago.
So what do you think the attraction is? It's a cold day. You're out in a shed with fake grass. What's the attraction?
I just think it's somewhere new to actually come and eat, and also after having a cup of coffee on the first day, the coffee is fantastic. And I think people just like to come and experience something new and different. I actually had the lamb and feta pizza.
Yes, I've heard of Oasis before because I've been to the Murrumbina store, which I absolutely love, and I was very excited when I saw that they're building one here, and I can't wait if it's the same, and the food's divine and the coffee is delicious.
And it's wonderful to see them open in Mornington.
How long have you known Oasis Bakery?
Probably close to 20 years.
So you would have seen a progression then?
I certainly have, yes.
Tell us about that. It started off, I believe, as a little takeaway shop.
It was pretty tiny, and you'd go in, you'd get your cheese pie. There were a couple of tables there. But now it's a restaurant. Beautiful takeaway things. And, I mean, you can literally do your whole shop there with all the imported groceries and things.
So there you have it. Mornington people are absolutely overjoyed that Oasis Bakery has opened up a pop-up store on Nepean Highway with a vision of offering a complete grocery store, cafe, bakery and family-friendly experience. It certainly shows we have become a foodie culture, always looking for something new and exciting in the cafe and restaurant scene. On a final note, last month Deborah Maher reported on the Summers concrete footpath dispute that is dividing the township of Summers. Some residents totally oppose concrete footpaths for aesthetic reasons. Some definitely want a concrete footpath for safety reasons. Others do want a footpath but think they shouldn't have to pay for it. Last Tuesday evening, Mornington Peninsula Shire Councillors held a public meeting with approximately 30 angry Summers residents and protesters in attendance. Summers protesters gathered momentum across the peninsula, which had councillors shaking in their boots, claimed one Summers protester. A Summers Village Community Association team member claimed Mornpan Shire CEO Carl Cowie spoke at length about the ongoing Summers pathway, describing it as a vexed issue and using the upcoming VCAT case pending as an excuse not to answer questions. The Shire overturned some of the pathway proposals under the footpath special charge scheme program, but refused to read out questions written by Summers residents. Some residents walked out. Council has the power to overturn the decision if three councillors oppose construction of concrete footpaths. With two councillors already opposing the footpaths, Summers residents are hoping another councillor will come forward. VCAT will proceed to hear the Summers concrete footpath case on Monday the 24th of October after another public meeting planned for August. Next week, I on the Peninsula will speak to a former councillor about the situation that erupted last week. That's all we've got time for this week. If you have any news from the street you want to share with our team, please contact RPPFM on 5975 1234. Next week on the Peninsula, we'll again bring you up to date with issues that matter. We hope you can tune in next Tuesday at noon on 98.7 or 98.3 FM Frankston. You can live stream from our website, rpfm.com.au, and download the RPPFM app. If you miss any Eye on the Peninsula programs, podcasts are available on our website, and check out the Eye on the Peninsula Facebook page. Thank you to Deborah Maher, executive producer of Eye on the Peninsula, ministers and guests, and Kevin Wilcox, our news researcher. I'm Piers Cunningham. Thanks for your company.